Welcome to the Abracadam Podcast. I'm your host, stand-up comedy magician Danny Whitson. I hope my Abracadamits are doing good out there grinding. I know I'm grinding. I'm moving right along. I'm moving slowly, though. Mainly because there's always a senior citizen getting in front of me that's doing like 20 miles under the speed limit. And I got to be honest, that got me thinking. I was like, you know, I wonder, what age is it? What is the magic number to where you begin to start slowing down? Like, is it 45 and a half or 50 or what? You know, does your foot just each year just come a little bit more off the gas each year? All the way up until you realize you're just sitting there, not even moving anymore. I don't know. It just made me wonder. It's like, I do know this, like, I'm in my early 40s, and if someone slams a door, that will ruin my day. Yes, I can't imagine what could be going on in your life that you have to slam a door. I mean, that's totally unnecessary, slamming doors. I mean, man, it's just, I don't understand that. I've got some show dates to announce. Next Friday, May 21st, I'm going to be at Straight to L Brewery in Huntsville, Alabama. Tickets are on sale right now at brownpapertickets.com. It is limited seating, so you definitely want to get in there and get those tickets because they are selling up, which I'm extremely excited about to see people get back out and see shows again. So definitely, if you're in the Huntsville, Alabama area, come out and see me at Straight to L Brewery and get those tickets today. We're going to have some hocus jocus going on, baby. Okay. Well, today's episode is brought to you by Rosie Tattoos. Custom tattoos designed to suit your style in a friendly and clean environment. I've been getting my tattoos done by Rosie for a while now, and I couldn't recommend anyone else because she does excellent work. As a matter of fact, I got an appointment to see Rosie here in just a few weeks, and I cannot wait to get my ink therapy done, baby. Rosie gets free consultations by Facebook Messenger, Instagram, or by email. Shoot her an email at rosietattoos@yahoo.com. Give Rosie a call today at 865-281-3451 or go see Rosie at 5710 Kingston Pike, Knoxville, Tennessee. Get your ink therapy done. You know you want a tattoo. Go see Rosie Tattoos. This episode is also brought to you by Will's Towing. Located at 2081 Oak Ridge Turnpike, Oak Ridge, Tennessee. Now, guys, no one likes to be broke down on the side of the road. It's awful. It sucks. But don't panic. If this does ever happen, give Will Roberts a call at 865-272-5300 and let Will Roberts take care of your towing needs. Will will come pick it up, and he will park that car anywhere you need him to park it. If you want that car set in your living room, Will will put it in your living room. Also, we've all seen those tow truck drivers that show up and they look kind of sketch, you know, like they may have been touching a possum before they came up to you. You know what I mean? One of those guys. You never have to worry about that at Will's Towing. Everybody who works at Will's Towing is clean, safe, and very friendly to deal with. So if your car breaks down, you need a towing service at all, give Will Roberts a call at Will's Towing. That's 865-272-5300. All right, today's guest on the podcast is somebody who I've had the pleasure of knowing for a few years now. He's a very talented and funny stand-up comedian. And also, even better than that, he's just a real, real good dude. You know, you really don't mean, you meet a lot of funny people, but you don't meet a lot of good funny people. So today's guest is definitely that. And I tell you what, one thing about this episode that really stuck with me is the end of this episode. He covers about how to try to be a better person, especially on social media. So I tell you what, if you guys will, sit back and relax and enjoy my fun conversation with the very funny stand-up comedian, Joe Deuce.
All right, we got Joe Deuce here today on the Abracadam Podcast. How you doing, Joe?
Oh, I can't complain, Danny. You know, just chilling, being black in Kentucky in 2021. So, just Yeah, lockdowns or lockups. I'm going to take lockdown, I guess, for now.
That's funny. Well, I tell you what. Now, I know who you are, and a lot of comics know who you are, and I'm sure they know who you are in Kentucky. But if you don't mind, will you go ahead and introduce yourself to the listeners for me?
Of course, of course. I'm Joe Deuce. I am a stand-up comedian from Lexington, Kentucky. Travel all over the country and tell jokes. You probably heard me on the radio if you're in Kentucky on Z-Rock 103 or Hot 102.5 and on the TV at Channel 36. Yeah, that's me in a nutshell. I coach soccer at a college when I'm not doing comedy, which is a whole lot of fun, and travel all throughout the South especially. So I think that's where most of your listeners are anyway, right?
Yeah, well, you know what's weird is I have a lot of local in the South, but then for some reason, dude, I've got a bunch of listeners in Australia and some in Europe, and that makes no sense to me.
Australia is big on podcasts. It's crazy to me. I don't know. Is it lonely, Australia? Is that what's going on? Like,
I guess, man.
Every podcast I've been on, they have a lot of listeners in Australia for some reason.
It's weird. I'm like, I don't know anybody in Australia, but cool.
It is what it is. Hey, you know, take them where you can get them.
Okay, now, what you said something, man, that first of all, you said you coach soccer, college soccer.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
All right. Now, we're in America now, bro. So so college soccer in America, and you're black. Hold on, man. There's a lot of things going on here. How many black athletes do I see in American soccer?
I think you would see more than you probably expect in American soccer, actually.
Really?
A lot of them, though, are not necessarily – there may be first-generation or second-generation American. A lot of their families are from Africa or France or Haiti or Dominican Republic or wherever. Yeah, but I coach college women's soccer, the NCAA Division III level. And, yeah, I have a blast. I played in college. I was – yeah, like you said, I played at a small school in Kentucky. Everybody else black on the team was from an island or from Africa. I'm the only one who didn't have an accent, although they all thought I had a crazy accent. It's different. I think it's weird to think about from a soccer perspective in the rest of the world where it's football. In the rest of the world, the top athletes are soccer players. You know, that's Cristiano Ronaldo and Messi and Lukaku or whoever you want to think of, like they're usually the top athletes in that country. So if you think about it, if America was the same as the rest of the world, imagine LeBron James playing a forward or Kobe Bryant playing goalkeeper or Michael Jordan as a midfielder, like all of those things would be happening if we didn't have access to so many other sports.
And see, that makes me wonder. And I mean, I've had that discussion before, you know, mm-hmm. And I wasn't trying to come off as the cocky, arrogant American, but I mean, we do have a lot of the greatest athletes in the world right here in our country. So when I can't help but wonder, I'm like, what would our soccer team be like if soccer was as popular as basketball and football?
Know? And it's getting there gradually, the popularity of the sport. From like when I was growing up in Kentucky, we had to go to Cincinnati or Louisville or down to your area like Knoxville in order to play in games that, you know, had any kind of talent and be seen by any kind of colleges or anything. You know, now that Podunk, West Virginia, or, you know, some place in the middle of nowhere, Arkansas, has a team. And so it's grown and the sport has grown here. But yeah, it's very different than it is the rest of the world. I've been fortunate enough to be in other places in the world during big soccer tournaments or, you know, even to play a little bit there. And it's been very different. But we'll get there eventually. I think it's, you're a dad. I think one thing I think a lot about is I want a life that's better for my kid than what I had, but it's almost too much better. And I think that's what America is when it comes to sports. Like it should be a better place than a lot of other places, but it's too much better. There's too many options. Everyone can play some sport and find out they're good in it and get training and facilities and go to college on a scholarship. And so there's too many options. You know, if you're in, I don't know, Nigeria, your options are pretty much, I'm going to play soccer or maybe basketball if I'm really tall and big. But you don't have the football, the tennis, the golf, the whatever else, horse racing, like equestrian stuff is big, you know, even now, lacrosse. You don't have any of that option. So it's you have soccer, basketball, or be very smart. Those are your three options if you want to go anywhere.
So. You know what's, you know, talking like as a parent too, and I think this is a this is becoming a reality. What we're going to start seeing too in the future is a lot of parents are like, you know, well, hold on, wait a minute. You know, I don't know. I want my child playing full contact football at such a young age just because of concussion issues. And I mean, don't get me wrong. I love football. I love football as a sport. But it, you can take somebody who played football their entire life, they're beat up, bones are broken, and a lot of their children are playing, you know, sports that aren't so, you know, aren't so harsh or so, you know, ruthless, because there's still a lot to be learned about the concussion issue within. And NFL don't like talking about it. They try to make it go yeah. away as much as possible, but that's an ongoing issue.
Yeah, it's weird, Danny, because actually I think soccer is a kind of a hidden world for most Americans. Most people who are here in the United States don't think about soccer unless their kid is playing or unless that's their world they live in. We actually have some of the same issues. So I think, you know, concussions are a huge discussion point for a lot of soccer players and coaches and safety experts. There's headgear that some soccer players are wearing now that, to be honest, probably doesn't help very much. There's talk about having kids wear helmets. At one point, which I was like, that's ridiculous. You know, there is some of the same discussions are happening here. I don't think we're seeing the same fall off as youth football, because the contact is so obvious in football. Like, your whole goal is to hit somebody else. But I mean, in soccer, you're looking at, instead of the level of concussions, you still have concussions, but then you're looking at torn ligaments, broken bones, especially in the lower extremities. All of that kind of stuff, knocked out teeth from headers. You know, I've seen that over and over again at kids as young as 12, you know, having false teeth for the rest of their life because they went up and somebody slung their head back. And so you can still see the injuries. I think soccer's growing, and I think the more you look at it, it's a beautiful game. It is somewhat boring to watch sometimes. And so I think that's where it's lost on a lot of Americans. But for the youth, I think that youth sports are growing as far as soccer because of, you know, the skittishness around football. I would encourage any parent who's listening who has kids that want to play soccer, wait till they're like 8, 9, 10 before you put them in any kind of serious soccer training, because otherwise they get to high school and college and they're already burned out. Their bodies are worn down, because soccer, they play year round now. You know, you play in the fall with your high school, you play in the winter with a club team, you play in the spring with a club team, you train all summer with some international travel team if you're doing that kind of stuff. And so by the time you've done that for 12 years, you know, as if you started when you were 4, you're a 16-year-old kid with a torn ACL that you've already had. You've got shoulder issues. If you're a keeper, you've got all this other stuff. And maybe you don't even enjoy it. And then you go to college and you hate it. You don't perform well for the coach, and then you lose scholarships. And I think that's the cautionary tale I would put out there. Football, you're worried about injuries. Soccer, you got to worry about burnout, because it's so much on the body to put on a kid who's going through development, who's going through the emotional development, who's going through learning how to contact somebody shoulder to shoulder as opposed to just nailing somebody into a goalpost or whatever. So it's a whole nother bag of issues. It's just different.
And there's not a lot of rest time in soccer. It's like constant cardio.
Yeah. My brothers both played football and they wanted me to play football too. And I think it's interesting, because in football, when I played, you know, you're sprinting for maybe 30 seconds. And that's only if you're a running back or a wide receiver or a quarterback. The linemen aren't sprinting that whole time, but they are putting in a whole lot of power and force for 30 seconds at a time. But then you get 40 seconds of rest. In soccer, you're running for 40 minutes. you know, you might have 5 minutes of rest at certain points throughout the first half if you're lucky. And it's a different type of shape. But as somebody who loves all sports, I think soccer – does a great job preparing your lungs and your body to endure a lot of other things too. So,
you know, that's interesting, because I like sports too. I played some football in, you know, the middle school years, junior high. And also when I was a kid, I did Golden Gloves. So, I look here in America and, you know, that's a whole new other topic too. You know, if you're a fan of boxing, you know, on the heavyweight side, at least, we're not existent, you know, we don't exist anymore. And I think maybe, I don't know, you know, you brought up LeBron James and you brought up imagine if those athletes would have went on to box or, you know, we may have, you know, something, but that's, I think you're right, though. There's too much. There's too much to choose from. There's too much in this country for you to get involved with. But this is interesting because not a lot of comics are huge sports fans, you know? And it's almost because there's a, I have a hate relationship like with Tennessee football here in town, you know, other than the fact that they went to hell in a handbag, but you know, whenever there's a football game scheduled and a show scheduled.
Oh, that's rough. That's hard. That is, I get it. Here's what makes me mad. I'm here with UK. UK basketball, literally our comedy club here locally, will look at the basketball schedule before they determine who they're going to book for the next, 3 months when the basketball season's happening. And now, for some god-awful reason, our football team's getting okay. So now we also have to worry about the football schedule too. And it's so hard to book shows knowing that that's happening. But we've actually, a lot of times we've been able to figure out with some of the local businesses how to piggyback. So we're going to watch the football game, at 3 o'clock on Saturday. And when it ends at 5, we're going to kick off a comedy show for an hour. And people are already there. And so sometimes it's great and sometimes it's not good. When you try to cross promote certain things, like it's like opening for a band or going on after a band who everyone really came to see. It's the same with those. When I can't imagine in Knoxville how bad it is with Tennessee football going on, and basketball's pretty decent there too, so even having to worry about that a little bit. I have friends who are down in Alabama, and anytime there's a Bama or an Auburn game, either one, they have to worry about two colleges because everything's kind of split down there. Yeah, it's something a lot of comics don't even think about, I don't think. And, I've been on a lot of alt shows that'll be like, hey, we're going to have a show. And I'm like, the national championships that night. And they're like, what? And I'm like, it's probably not a good – I mean, okay, that's fine. If your crowd will come, I'll be there. But it's not going to be good.
You need to watch the news, man.
Right, yeah.
You're not land on Mars, bro, and you've got this Bringer show.
Right. I do not do Bringer shows. Never.
Oh, I don't either no more.
Never.
I've had my taste. I ain't never doing them no more.
I never even had a taste. I've been invited on a few and I'm like, no, if I've got to bring people for me to be able to perform and I'm only a year into comedy, this is not going to be good. It's not going to work out.
No. Yeah. I have my first real bomb as a comic. It was a Bringer show, and it was called the Giggle Before You Gobble show, and it was a Bringer show, and it was the night before Thanksgiving.
Okay, so I was gonna say some Thanksgiving.
All these people bringing in their family, and man, ain't nobody was getting out of the house on Wednesday night. They was cooking dinner, for me at least. But anyways, that ain't the reason why. I just bombed. But I remember it was one of those lineups where there was like 11 comics. And I hadn't been doing just stand up that long. This was a period where I was trying to learn stand up, so I was doing just stand up, no magic, nothing on stage. And I was the 11th comic. And in my dumbass mind, I was thinking, oh, I'm gonna go in here and clean this up, baby. I'm headlining with my 6 minutes. I'm headlining, So I went in there, man, and I just. Dude, it was horrible. It was horrible. I ate a bag of balls. It was just and that ride home, oh man. God, that ride home, But ever since then I was like, man, I ain't doing none of these damn Bringer shows. I ain't doing it. But hey, bombing's good for you though. Builds character, right?
people say that. I don't know that I guess it does in some like I remember one show that I really felt like I gotta come back and like kill this show because it was like, it was a challenge. Like, oh, I didn't do well. Okay, now I'm coming back and I'm going to knock your socks off. And I did. And that's great. But like other times I've had a bad show. I don't think most of the audience knew I had a bad show. I think as comedians, we beat ourselves up so much. Like there's been times where I've seen audience members come up and be like, that was an okay show. I didn't think it was funny as this guy or whatever. But like, I'm like, you don't have to tell us that because when we get in our car or the green room or the bathroom or just two steps off of stage, we're already killing ourselves in our head. Like we've already said, you messed up this joke. You didn't say this. You were going to do these three jokes. You didn't even get to those, you dummy. Like, and so like, I almost feel like comedians could perform in front of no one or they could perform in front of a million people. And at the end of the set, the feeling is going to be about the same. You, unless you absolutely murder it, in your head, you're going to say, oh, God, what did you, why didn't you do this? They clearly weren't on board for that. You should have done this instead. And it becomes this, like, battle. It's almost like the good demon and the angel, you know, like the angel and the demon on the shoulders. That's what's happening in our heads. But it's like good comedy and what you just did are going back and forth. And even when I've had shows where I feel like I blew it out of the water and still on the ride home thinking, oh, why didn't I do this? Oh, why did I? And people, and my wife is the worst about it. You did a great, you had a great show. Shh. Mm-mm, I don't want to, no. Yeah. Like, maybe to you, you, what do you know? And she's just trying to help.
You know, I always say, some shows are work and some shows are fun. And we all want those fun shows. But there's times like when I say work, the audience may not realize that I'm working, you know, they're having a good time, but inside my head, I'm hating myself. I'm like, man, what, you know,
yeah,
having to work. But no, and I'm with you. I've had shows to where I know I've killed it, blown out the water. And on the way home, I'm focused on that one thing that I should have done different or I should have said different. You know, I think that's just in our nature. I don't know. And it's funny that you said that earlier when you said you came back and get them. I always use the term, I always used to think when I think of an audience is, sometimes I somewhat like a challenge, you know, it's like, I can't wait to get out here and bust them right in the mouth. You know what I mean? Kind of like a, you know, you're going to get up here and just get them as fast. They don't know what's coming. You know what I mean? I like those situations sometimes because it kind of keeps you on your toes a little bit, you know, because you ever had those shows where you're just killing it, having just great shows, good shows, and then you know that one crowd is just waiting for you around the corner to test you. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I think everything is a balance, and that's what you have to kind of keep in mind. The shows where you feel like you're doing the best ever, the next show or the next one, it's going to be one of the two next shows you have probably. It's going to be work, and you're going to have to fight an audience to get them to laugh. And the worst part is, I think the audience, like you said, they don't know, you know, that you're working, because I've had audiences where it's literally them staring at me and giving me chuckles, you know, every minute or so, but they shut up immediately. It's like one of those, like, all right, next joke. Like, and you get done and you're like, my God, I'm exhausted. I can't believe I just had to do so much work. Like, Lord, why did you put me in this situation? What's going on? And then you go out to the lobby and everybody's like, you were amazing. And I'm like, I wish you would let me know that with your laughter from your mouth hole. Like, that's what I wanted. Like, it's, you know what, Danny, I had an experience, I guess it was 2 years ago now, that let me know. I think it's like that for every entertainer. Every entertainer is beating themselves up. I was at this festival in Columbus called the Sonic Temple Festival, and I was on a lineup with Pauly Shore, and it was the day after his dad passed away, and there was bad weather stuff. We were all set to do our show, and they ended up canceling the comedy tent because we needed to get back on schedule with the music side, and the Foo Fighters were headlining. And through a series of events, we ended up in the green room with the Foo Fighters. Pauly Shore got to introduce them, and like we got to hang out with the Foo Fighters and had a blast. But I remember distinctly after the show being back in their dressing room, you know, they come in, they have pizza and all this other stuff, and we're like all just kind of hanging out. And I remember Dave Grohl walking in and he talked to his road manager and literally saying, like, did you like when we did this? And I'm like, oh, he's questioning? Like, even this, because in my opinion, Dave Grohl is one of the best musicians to ever walk. Absolutely. I mean, he was in Nirvana. He's running the Foo Fighters. He's also just a pleasant person. He's a great guy, very talented. And for him to say, what'd you think of this? I'm like, why do you care about that person's opinion? You're like a rock god. What are you doing? And then I thought about it. I'm like, wow, like even the top people in their head think it was good, but it could be better. Something's, I need to improve somehow. And I'm like, if he's at that level, there's no telling how much money he made that night. And he's at that level. I made my little measly couple hundred bucks or whatever. And I'm like, he's at that level. No one's going to question what he's doing. And he still himself is thinking, I don't know, maybe I should have. Then I'm like, okay, then we're not that weird. I think every person who's an entertainer who's good, I think, has those questions. There's people who are terrible entertainers who literally after every show are like, ooh, killed it. I murdered that one. And I'm like, you, what? You know exactly the people I'm talking about. They will put up a post on Facebook, I just murdered another scene, caught a body on stage. I'm like, what? No, like, it was an open mic where you did 2 minutes. What are you talking about?
So I've seen some and I'm just like, gosh, why did you post that? I almost, I feel bad for them. I'm like, what are you doing? What are
right. You doing? It's like body dysmorphia, but for performance issues. Like, it's like, what is the rest of your life this way? Like, do you like, you like burn bacon and you're like, murdered it. I'm like, it's bacon. That's, you can't mess up bacon. Like, what are you thinking? Those people are not the ones who are going to be at the top of the game. Kevin Hart is a perfectionist. You know, when Dave Grohl had that question, Dave Chappelle, I know, asked his people like, hey, what am I doing? Should I be doing this? You know, and like, those are the people I look to. I'm like, okay, if I beat myself up, it's not as abnormal as I thought it was. I thought I was unhealthy. And then I see some of these people doing the same things, you know, it makes me think, okay, I'm at least on the right track, or have the right attitude about the fact that everything can still be improved upon. Nothing is perfect and nothing is set in stone.
Well, you know, Joe Deuce, you are a fantastic comic, brother. You are. You're very funny. I enjoy your stuff. And you know what? I hear a lot of stuff and I, you know, a lot of, it might be funny. I don't even really laugh, but I laugh at your stuff. So
I appreciate it. I think I suck, but I appreciate you saying it. No, it's, I think it's been a work, and it's been an honor that I've been able to do the things I've been able to do. And I think I'm blessed in some ways because I haven't had as many bad shows from an audience perspective anyway, as a lot of people have. You know, I'm 10 years in now, and I can count the number of shows where I feel like I bombed or you know, just ate a bag just on one hand, which is great. Because some people, that's their first 3 years, and somehow they still manage to keep pushing.
Now, so let me ask you this. You've been in it 10 years. What got you into stand-up, brother? What was your inspiration? What got Joe Deuce going?
Oh, man. You know, there's several different inspirations. I think it's just my life kind of led me here. What happened when I was younger, I used to go to my grandparents' house. They lived in the middle of nowhere, Kentucky. They had a trailer. And you'd get there, they didn't have cable. They had like 3 channels on their satellite dish. And then they had movies that you could watch. But your movie options were Red Skelton, which was like an old comedy show, yeah. Where the Red Fern Grows, or Old Yeller.
Remember that?
So I could either watch Dogs Die or I could watch Red Skelton. And so I watched Red Skelton and loved it. And I remember growing up, I would always watch that at my mom and papa's house. And then when they moved into the town, into the city, they had cable and we watched Nick at Night. That was like the channel you were allowed to watch. So then I got introduced to like Flip Wilson and Bob Newhart and all those guys and became even more interested. My brothers loved comedy. So I remember watching like Eddie Murphy Delirious, even though I was not supposed to be allowed to watch that, sneaking into the living room and watching it. And when I was like 10 years old, my mom took me to a comedy show. It was Sinbad. He came to Kentucky State University where she worked. And I remember he roasted the basketball coach. And I've talked to him about this. I've actually had the honor of interviewing him. And I talked to him about the fact that I saw him when I was this age. And he remembers the show too. Because he and the basketball coach, I didn't know this at the time. But they're cool. They were friends. And so he roasted him because he came in late. This guy was like a god on campus. And I'm like, Mom, he can't talk to Coach Graham like that. And my mom was like, he's a comedian. He can say whatever he wants to. And when you tell a 10-year-old that there's a job where you can say whatever you want to say, that was it. I was like, whoa, okay, I'm going to be a comic. And I kind of lost the dream, but like, you know, when I was in college, I hosted a bunch of shows and emceed, and then I came back to work in my alma mater and was in charge of our campus activities program. And we would go to these conferences, these national conferences like NACA and ACPA, and you'd see these comics get up and they do 10, 15 minutes, and some of them were horrible. And I'm looking and they're making, you know, they're still booking 10, 15 shows out of this. So I'm like, they're terrible. And they just booked 10 shows. And I'm doing the math in my head. I'm like, they're going to make what I make in a year almost, like just doing this. And my kids that I was working with, you know, the college students, they were like, Joe, you're funny in these guys. Why don't you get up and do it? And so I made them a bet and I lost. And I ended up going and doing an open mic at Comedy on Broadway. And like, that was it. From that point on, I was like, I'm doing this one way or another. And so it was a lot of years of working that job and coming into work at 8 a.m. after having driven 4 hours to do a, you know, a 15-minute set for $75 or something, and then driving back and getting back at 2 a.m. and waking up and going to work. One time I remember getting trapped in Cincinnati and having to drive back into work, like literally driving into the parking lot right on time for work, same outfit I had worn the day before. But you know, it is what it is. And that's the grind that a lot of people don't see. I love when they talk about overnight successes. No comedian is an overnight success. All of us have been doing some form of entertainment or trying to get there for probably a decade, two decades before something really jumps off. Kevin Hart, there's videos of him doing comedy from the early 90s. And then all of a sudden, you know, he gets big in the 2000s. The people are like, oh my God, where did this guy come from? Well, from years and years of grinding and writing and trying to do what he could do to get his foot in the door.
You know, there's footage out there of prior Bob.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah.
And in my book, you know, he's definitely, you know, arguably the king, you know? Mm-hmm. So, and I mean, but, and I even tell people new comics, I'm like, well, I'll go out here and YouTube, look this up, because you need to see, you know, somebody who appears to be immortal to be, you know, human, you know.
Yeah.
It was, and that guy put in the grind. I mean, I mean the whole, every comic, you know, that's successful, you know, and that's good has paid their dues and done that. But yeah, you're right. That's the stuff people don't see. I've had people come up and say, man, it's cool. You get to travel, you get to go places and see things. But I mean, what you don't see is, you know, me tired as hell driving on the interstate, you know, the anxiety of getting there and hope the hotel room don't got bed bugs. You know what I mean? I mean,
yeah, you know, that is, I mean, that's real. I mean, and it does not change no matter what level you get to. The anxiety is still there about getting on time to places. The anxiety is still there about, like, am I going to get along with the comic I'm working with this weekend? If you don't know them, it's just the first time working. Is the staff going to be cool with me? Am I going to get a good referral to come back and work here again? Are the people going to be okay? Because, you know, I've told these jokes in Kentucky and in Las Vegas and in Los Angeles, but I've never told them in, you know, in Albuquerque, like, you know, like wherever you're going. All of that goes into it. And that's what, yeah, people don't see. And they don't see when you're really in the road game. You know, there's times where you drive 4 hours, do a show, sleep in a hotel, but you're only there long enough to sleep because you got to wake up the next day and drive another 6 hours. And you're worried about time. You're worried about being tired. You're worried about getting to the place you're not familiar with. And then you get there and you got to do a show. And then sometimes you drive that 4 or 5 hours and you get there and they tell you, oh, this show's canceled. But, you know, if you want to hang out an extra day, we got another show tomorrow. And like all of that goes into it. And like, losing money for the first 3 years of being on the road and like barely breaking even and trying to figure out what you're going to do food wise. And then you figure out how to do your taxes and it gets a little bit easier, but.
You know, this year I was able to write some stuff off and I was like, well, that's cool. This is cool. Mm-hmm. I'm writing some things off, which is, you know, I'm like, it makes me love this country a little bit that I can. I was like, this was cool. But at the same time, man, yeah, the grind can be rough. And I'm lucky, like Antoinette will come to me with a lot of times on the road, which I'm blessed. God, I'm blessed to have her, you know.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of guys out there, man, that are doing this alone, you know, and the loneliness is, you know, gosh, that would be whole, you know, I just think about it because I hate to be alone.
Right. Oh, yeah, yeah. It's, I mean, that is a real issue that's plaguing our industry, entertainment in general, but especially comedy and road comics. You know, we have a lot of people who are taking their own lives, and I never want to say that, you know, like I understand what it's like to be suicidal, because I don't think been in that headspace really, but I can see at least how you would get there. You know, when I was out doing my first college tour and I was away from home for weeks on end, not seeing my family, not seeing my wife, who I'd already been married to for, you know, almost a decade at that point, that messes with you. And, you know, when you get done with your show and you've just gotten done giving everything you've got to this group of people, and you've been so vulnerable and emotional and you're ready, like, and then they're like, good show, and they just walk out and you're like, well, what am I going to do for the rest of my night? And then you go back to a hotel and eat a bucket of ice cream while watching SportsCenter, and then you fall asleep. And then you wake up the next morning at 6:30 in the morning, you go down to breakfast and the people are like, hey, how you doing? You're like, hey, and you don't really actually know anyone. It becomes very lonely, and it's almost, it's weird, but the loneliness becomes time consuming, you know, to the point where you don't want to get up and go do things. I had to make itineraries for myself of like, hey, when you get to this city, you got to go check this out. and making it like, okay, I'm going to get there on Tuesday at 4 o'clock. So at 5 o'clock, I'm going to go here for dinner and then I'm going to do the show. And then that night I'll sleep. The next morning, I'm going to go see this place before I leave town. And like that way you made it, it almost makes it like a vacation or you're excited. But like, I don't think, you know, there's some guys who've been out on the road for 20, 30, 40 years, full time, just on the, and I don't think I would be built for that life. I don't think mentally I'd be able to take it, or emotionally I'd be able to take it. Physically would even be risky. And I think I'm in okay shape, but like, yeah.
There's a lot of factors that goes into that. And, you know, I don't see myself ever doing anything else. I may be an old crusty old man still doing this crap. I don't know, you know, it could be, it's almost a sad reality sometimes when you do see those comics, especially like you have a family, you know, but we know comics that have married this lifestyle, and they wind up one day being old, no spouse, no kids. And I mean, if they smart, they put back money, but you know, a lot of entertainers don't put back money, you know? So it can be really tough and tricky, a lot of things about it, you know?
Yeah. I think that's the one thing that I've been grateful for is my ability to talk to older comics who've been in it a while growing in the comedy industry. You know, when you go and you spend a weekend, there's some comics I don't understand who will go and they'll spend a weekend with another comic and they don't talk about anything. Like they never stay in the green room and hang out. And I mean, everybody in this industry is a person. And there's some comics who don't want to talk to you. And I get that. You know, there's some who are like, you know, leave me alone. You're not, there's one guy in particular, Ari Spears, who will say like, I don't hang out. Like, and he'll
what
just like,
his problem, man?
I don't know.
I've heard that multiple times about
bro. Him. Yeah. But he doesn't want to hang out, and that's fine. That's his prerogative. But I'd say almost every other comedian I've ever worked with has been really cool about talking to you. And like, what I love is a comedian who's been in it 20, 30, 40 years, who can sit down and just say like, hey, these are the mistakes I made, or hey, these are the things I wish I did a little differently. You know, I was talking to Greg Hahn a few weeks ago, working with him. And he's telling me, you know, like, now look, make sure you invest your money. Don't just have it sitting in savings, because it's not going to build the same type of money that you need to be able to get out of this when you want to get out of it. And so he's talking about long-term investments and, you know, what portfolios you're using and what, and I'm like, man, like he's just giving me, and this is free. I'm not paying him for this advice. And it was both ways. I was discussing with him some things that I knew just from my education, but like, you know, I think it was good to have those kind of conversations and to hear their side of things and to hear the things that they regret, but also the things that they really love about what they've done. And I think it's amazing. Greg Hahn even told me, he was like, you're going to be fine. And I was like, thanks. And he was like, no, he's like, you got a wife and kid. He's like, some of the comics who are out here single ended up living a single life. They're just not going to make it. Things are going to get in their way. He's like, look at every successful comic you know out here. All of them have a wife. Almost all of them have a family. And I'm like, oh, well, that's true. He's like, it keeps you grounded and it gives you something you have to strive for. He's like, I'm just going to go hang out for 2 weeks now until I have my next weekend. I don't have anything I need to be working towards. He's like, you don't get that luxury. Your daughter's got to go to college at some point. I'm like, oh, that's a way I never looked at it. Is you know, oh, she's my motivation. And I did look at it that way. But like, literally, that gives me an edge over some other comics who maybe aren't as motivated.
And I'm with you there. That's a big motivation for me is, you know, this is my income now and I've got a mouth to feed. And, you know, I've got, you know, Antoinette's got a good job and she's super supportive. And, you know, like I said, I think that's important too. You got people in your corner like that. I was, you know, you remember Spanky Brown, correct?
Oh yeah, Spanky, yeah.
Spanky was so good to me, man, back in the you know, the day. And He gave me some of the best advice, and he would give anybody, you know, we'd call him Uncle Spanky, you know, we were all his nephews, you know, and he would always give you, he would tell it to you straight. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, you know, I still think about Spanky and the things that he's told me, you know? So, but, and even when I look at, you know, that kind of life, you know, it's that road life and the guys that, you know, they don't really want to go hang out anymore, but they don't have nothing else to do, you know?
Right, yeah, the options aren't there for them to do something different.
Man, after, I don't know about you, dude, but man, when I'm done, I want to go, let's go, let's go lay down. I'm tired, man, you know?
Yeah, I'm a good mix. I got especially when I'm on the road. When I'm at home, I want to go home. Like, I'm, you know, my home club, if certain comics will come in, I want to hang out with them because I want to catch up with them. You know, like if Stuart Huff's in town, I want to hang out because he's a friend of mine. Like if Dale Jones is here, I want to hang out with him because he's one of my favorite people in the world. But like for the most part, we get done with the show. I'll talk to you briefly. Then I'm going. I got a 30-minute drive home or whatever. I'm trying to get home, sit in my own bed. But when I'm on the road, I got a limit, but I'll sit and have two drinks with you.
Well, they're buying you drinks.
Well, the club's buying the drinks. But I'll sit and have a couple drinks with you. We can talk shop or whatever, you know, just to network and to gain some of those relationships. And I think some of the people who I really count on to, you know, pass work my way or to work with me, I've met through things like that, just hanging out at the club and soaking up the atmosphere and talking to people, especially local comics who maybe are on their way up or who are already up and they just happen to be in the area. I think those are great opportunities for the brotherhood to form. And I think comics, I don't want to say brotherhood because there's a lot of female comics who are great as well, but you know, like there's a family, a kinship that happens. Yeah. And I think that a lot of that happens after the show or in the green room backstage, where you're able to just kind of talk and you're like, 99% of the world doesn't get what we go through, but you get it. And if you don't, let me put you on game because these are some things you're going to need to know if you're going to continue doing these things, if you're not just like passing through. And so I think that those are some great opportunities. But again, yeah, you got a family. I got a family. I know my daughter's going to want to call me at 9 o'clock in the morning. So I can't be out till 3-4 o'clock in the morning. Yeah. That's not me anymore. That's,
you know, that's, you meet some crazy people too, dude.
Oh, bro, you know you do. both comics and audience members, just insane. And they want to go to karaoke bars and they want to go to other places and they just want to hang out and have a good time. And some people take them up on those offers. I can't. Sorry. Like I'll be happy to say hey. but that's it. I got stuff to do the next day. I got to talk to my daughter. Got to talk to my wife. I got to take this money you just bought this shirt with and go to the outlet mall and buy a better shirt. Like, got all those things. I got all those things coming up on my itinerary.
Oh my God. Are you guys listening? I didn't say that. Joe said that. I want, there's no better shirt than my shirt. So, that I'm selling.
I sell t-shirts out to my shows and I think they're great, but I'm not going to wear my own t-shirt all the time. Like I need to go and get some other shirts to wear on stage.
Yeah. That's kind of tacky. You don't want to wear your own merch.
Yeah, I mean, I do. Don't get me wrong. I do, but not often. There's one shirt I have that has my face on it. And my daughter is like, daddy, 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 daddy. Like, I'm like, I know it's weird that I have my own face on my chest, but it's okay. Whatever.
That's funny, man. Okay. I got to do this before I forget. I do this to every comic. Mm-hmm. Every comic that comes on to the Abracadam podcast, we got to do a magic trick, Joe Deuce.
Okay.
All right, man. Here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to do some mind reading.
Okay.
Okay?
Okay.
You believe in mind reading?
I do. One of my best friends is actually a mentalist.
Oh, mentalist. Yeah, one of them dudes.
Yeah. Shout out Johnny Zavant.
I might know him. I don't know.
He's in Chicago. You might know him. Yeah.
I might know. Mentalists are always like, mentalists are always kind of, what do we call that? Grown up. It's like magic for grown ups. You get what I'm saying? I don't know. It's.
Let me tell you, when I first started doing comedy and was trying to get into the college market, he took me on a couple of show tour with him. And he's very intense and he's into it. But he's fun. He's also very fun. But like we did a show at one place and at the end I helped him get all his stuff to gather up. And he does this thing where he has this big roll that has numbers on it that he's pulling from the audience. And so I rolled it up for him. We go to the next place. I do my comedy set. I bring him up. He starts doing his show and he gets to that trick. And apparently I rolled the roll backwards. And I've never seen such daggers come out of someone's eyes Like, he just looked at me in the back of the room, and then but he busted out laughing because he was like, you know, he didn't tell me, but it was the most hilarious, like, inside joke. No one knew why we were laughing, but I'm dying in the back of the room because I'm like, oh, I rolled it backwards, I guess.
That's hilarious.
All right.
I've been in some of them situations. I have. I got a few of those. All right, well, here. I'm going to hold up some cards right here, Joe. And okay. I want you to think of one of these cards. Just don't say it. Just think of it. Get in your head.
All right, got it.
Got it. Cool. What I'm going to do, I'm going to put the cards in the deck here. I'm going to give them a shuffle. And now I'm going to cut the deck, okay? I'm going to cut to a card, and I'm going to try to cut to the card that I think you're thinking of.
Okay.
I'm going to stop. I'm obligated right here, Joe Deuce. Okay. Obligated. I've cut the deck. What is the card you're thinking of?
It is the Eight of Diamonds.
The Eight of Diamonds. Joe Deuce, I cut to one card only.
What? No way. No.
You've been abracadabbed, Joe Deuce.
Okay. All right. Wow. That's interesting. I picked three different cards and then was like, I'm going to go with the eight. I think I'm going to go with the eight. And I pulled it up on my phone just so you couldn't deny that I picked it. And then you still got it.
Man, I'm impressed. Magic over Zoom has been weird, man. It's really weird. And I mean, it's been tough to be creative because whenever the pandemic hit, everybody was trying to figure out a way to have some type of virtual show, which I hate virtual shows. I don't like them. And to be creative and have a virtual show was real challenging. But yes, a lot of mind reading. But also, have you done any Zoom mics, comedy shows through Zoom?
Yes, a lot. A lot. I say a lot. It's been a lot for me, a lot more than I ever expected to do in my life. And I have figured out the way that works for me. I've done two shows that were hosted by other people. Let me put that out there. And those were fine. But every other show has been a show that I've booked privately for, like, I did a birthday party last week. I've done shows for, you know, a couple sports teams as a coach. You know, they like for people who can relate to them to do those things. I've done a couple of college shows and they have been fine. The first two or three were rough and awkward, but then once I figured out, like, hey, yeah, it's awkward for me, but it's just as awkward for these people. And, you know, lucky for me, I've also had the corporate side of things in my job as a coach, having to sit on long coaches Zoom meetings and stuff that we don't care about. And I'm like, man, if somebody would just do something to keep my attention, I would pay attention because I got to be here anyway. And I was like, knowing that and keeping that mindset going into those shows has made it very easy for me to connect with a lot of the audiences. And I think the one thing you get differently in these Zoom shows is whoever you got who's tuning in is a focused audience for whatever reason. You know, at a comedy club, they're just there to see jokes and you don't know what their focus is unless you're doing a corporate event at a comedy club.
Yeah.
And I do a lot of corporate shows, which has helped me, I think, but in Zoom, they're there for a reason. They're here to celebrate someone's birthday. They all play this basketball on this team, or they all are. And so you can literally tap right into that. And, you know, my first 10 minutes is usually really, really focused on whoever that group is. And we have a good time and we start laughing at each other and everything. And then the rest of the show goes so much easier. But yeah, it is a beast. And I do not, some people are like, this might be the new normal. Some people started virtual comedy clubs. Let me just tell you this. If this is the new normal, then y'all gonna hate me. I'm doing bars. I'm gonna take that world by storm. If the rest of y'all are going online, I'm going in person. I'm vaccinated. I've been vaccinated for a month and a half now. I'm in. I'm going. So that's, yeah.
I'm getting my second shot tomorrow. And this is one thing I'm nervous about, because I'm getting my second shot and I'm not nervous about any side effects, anything. But I got Steve Bargatze coming on tomorrow. That's Nate's dad.
Right, right.
And I'm like, man, I don't want to be sick and sluggish and feeling like crap interviewing Steve. Come on, man. So, yeah. But the one thing I'll say about the Zoom is, you know, I've done some corporate things. I've done things where they've had their monthly meeting and they have me come in and do some stuff. I wanted to, when I do anything virtual, what I like to do, I want them to try to, I try to make them forget about this barrier. You mm-hmm. know what I mean? And, you know, to me, that's been the challenge part. But I mean, for the most part, you know, I think I have figured out how to, you know, to make them feel like, you know, we're in the room together, we're having a good time. Do you think it's going away though? Because I mean, I for one, I like live shows. I'm with you, man. I want right. I got to have that live show. But I think it for a corporate at least, I'm afraid that now that you know on the corporate side they've seen this option is available, yeah. and I don't think it's going to go away completely for corporate.
I think yeah. I think for me, first of all, you got a pregame for that second shot. That's what they tell me. You got to. Chug Pedialyte. They got a new adult flavor. It's coconut. So you can make a Pedia Colada. Go ahead and do that and you'll be fine. That's what I heard. But right. yeah, on the Zoom thing, I want live shows for comedy. For the corporate stuff and even some of the stuff that I do with like college teams and stuff, I'm actually fine if it doesn't go away. And this is from a selfish perspective. Like there's nothing better to me than being able to make, you know, the bills for the month. Basically, because you know corporate prices are great. There's nothing like being able to make most of my bills and sitting in my boxers with a button up on in my bedroom or in my daughter's room or in the living room or wherever I do the show. And I think that those things lend themselves. Corporate gigs are already awkward. And if you do it at their office, if you do it at some banquet, if you do it at a comedy club, at a church, it's still going to be awkward to start. And so the Zoom thing doesn't bother me, the awkwardness, because it was going to be there anyway. And I think you can attest to this. We've done enough bad shows that, for me, any barrier, like what you were talking about, actually becomes a tool now. You know, I did a show a few months ago in Owensboro, Kentucky, and the mic was terrible. And so, like, we just got rid of the mic. And that became part of my set. Like, I'm talking about the mic, the way we sounded on it. And that's, like, 10 minutes of my set was just filled up with that. When I go on Zoom, if somebody's display name is stupid, or if like their background is they use some virtual background and it looks a mess or whatever, like I'm able to key in on some of that. And I think that helps, but I don't have a problem if for corporate, if they say, hey, we can bring in these comedians because they're all over the country and we don't have to pay them to travel. We don't have to pay for them to hotel. Then it's a win for them. And for us, that means we don't have to travel. We don't have to sleep in a hotel. And I've been lucky enough to be able to say, like, you know, Comedy Off Broadway in Lexington has opened back up. And they say, hey, Joe, can you do this weekend? You know, we got so-and-so coming in. Yeah, sure, Jordan. You know, here's the thing. I've actually got a virtual show at, you know, 6 o'clock on that Thursday. Cool. Come to the club and do it in the green room. All right, cool. And so I've literally been able to do like a virtual show, make more money than I'm going to make the whole weekend. And then get off the virtual show and not have to have missed out on work and then go downstairs and do, you know, shows that entire weekend. And it's like regular comedy. And now this becomes almost an add-on. In radio, we do a lot of promotional things, you know, where it's like we might show up at a business. But eventually we started doing Facebook Lives with people from the business or with their products. So we didn't even have to go to the business. Hey, this is Joe coming to you, Facebook Live. I got this shake from so-and-so. And this is, you know, and that puts money in my pocket and I never had to leave the studio. I think this now, the Zoom comedy realm has become one of those things where you get an add-on where it's, hey, I've got 2 weekends booked in New York. But at the same time I'm there, I can also perform in Dallas for this huge convention that's going on. And I can do this group of school teachers in North Carolina who wants me to come and perform for them. I can do all of that. All from this arena, this little box. And I think it, in my opinion, makes it better because in some ways it gives us the ability that we can reach way more audiences than we would before. But I don't want our comedy club audience to go here. I want that to go back to the clubs or the arenas or the theaters or whatever we're doing.
You know, I agree with you. I think, you know, that they're probably a silver lining out of it, kind of what you mentioned, that takes back to what we were talking about, you know, being a road comic and how tough the road could be. You know, this mm-hmm. can take some of the stress off that. Let me now, you know, I always say this, like when people, you know, cause you always hear the term in show business, when I make it, you know, and I always tell people, I was like, I already feel like I made it because I'm getting paid to do this, you know. Mm-hmm. What's your definition of success?
I mean, I think success for me is that my family is taken care of, and that I am in some demand. It doesn't even have to be high demand, as long as the money and the demand work it out. And to be able to do what I love, I think if you can do what you love, you know, it makes your life more enjoyable. You know, when I go to work, whether it's coaching soccer or doing comedy shows or whatever, like, I don't feel like I'm dragging myself to a job. And I've been at a point in my life where I did feel like that. And so I think for me, success is being able to do those things and being able to, like, still spend time with the people who I love. So I love the fact that I can go and work on a weekend and make enough money to pay our bills. And, you know, soccer is only during a certain point of the year, and most of the rest of my job I can do on the road if I need to. And so I'm able to see my family. You know, my daughter's still young, so we can even take her on road trips with us and go and visit zoos and museums and aquariums or like that. I think, yeah, I'm like you. I feel like I've made it. Now, am I as famous as I want to be? No. But then I also hear people saying, oh, man, you could be the next Dave Chappelle. You could be the next. I'm like, I don't want to be any of those people. I want to be the only Joe Deuce. And that does not equate in my head to me being not able to go out in public without being harassed. You know, I want to be, I don't know if you know Donnell Rawlings, I want to be his level of famous. He's got the TV credits, the movie credits, he's got high demand in the comedy clubs and corporate, he's a fun guy, he's real cool, but he can also just go grab a bite to eat and not get bothered a whole bunch. Maybe somebody says, oh my gosh, you Ashy Larry, and they might stop by his table and get a picture or something, but he's not getting hounded, and he doesn't have to have security guards with him to take his daughter somewhere. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's the level that would be ideal for me, personally. Some people want to be Kevin Hart famous. Have at it.
I'm with you on that. You know, my friend tells me I'm hood famous, which, you know, so in town around here, you know, people know what I do and, you know, and stuff like that. But I when I think about being famous, I think I wouldn't want to be like too, you know, annoying famous, you know what I mean? I'd like to just enough to where I can get butts in the seats. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah, and pay my bills and have no issues and no worries. You know, you're in Tennessee, so I don't know which hood you're talking about being like. you could be like hood famous, or you could be like
I grew up in white hood famous. I grew up in the W streets here.
Okay.
So that's where that comes from, I guess. I don't know what that But no, I'm with you, man. I'm with you 100% on that. I agree, you know. To me, I think it's also as you get older, you realize what's truly important in your life. And I think, man, that's awesome. You're able to take your daughter with you. And, you know, sometimes – now, my daughter's been to shows, but, you know, and I think she'll look back one day when she gets older. Right now, she just don't care. She's not even paying attention to anything, you know.
Right.
Like, but – you know, I think those are memories that you're creating with your family, which I think that's awesome. And that, to me, that's successful. I do want to ask you this before we get out of here, because I got to ask every comic. We got to hear a good hell gig story, Joe Deuce. Let's hear a story.
I've got a bunch of hell gig stories. I'll share this one because it's one of my favorites. You know, in Lexington, the comedy scene, and I mean, Knoxville, I don't know how big of a comedy scene you guys have now. At one point, it was fairly well. And, you know, that's back when I remember Coors Baby Legs was down there and Matt Ward and all those guys. And I would come down and, you know, you guys had a good scene. Lexington, when I started, had a pretty similar scene where there was these friendly rivalries, you know. And one of my favorite people is a guy named Kyle Fields, who is – a comic. He also did radio. In fact, he was my predecessor as the co-host on the morning show, and then me and him kind of flipped positions, and he did a college game show that I was hosting before, and I did the radio, and we went to high school together and everything, so we're pretty close. But he and I had this like rivalry friendly kind of thing, and you know, we would just mess with each other a little bit on stage. And I remember doing a show, and I thought it was going to be an amazing show. This guy set it up, and it was in this theater. And they were like, we're in this opera house in Cynthiana, which is close to my hometown. So I'm like, okay, it's fine. And we get there, and there's my wife, another comic's wife, The guy who put on the show, his two parents, and then a table of three people. And that's it. We're not in the main theater, even. They put us up in this, like, weird section of the theater where I'm pretty sure the colored people used to have to sit. Like, this, I'm like, this feels familiar and not in a good way. I don't like being set in here. And so we go up there, and I'm headlining the show. So that means I have to sit and watch this entire debacle unfold. And as it goes on, it just continues getting worse and worse and worse. And the three people who were there, like, they're like, why did we come? And the two parents of the guy who put on the thing are like, oh my goodness, this is not going to be good. And then I'm just like, okay, I'm gonna do my best. So on before me is Kyle. And Kyle gets up and he does his set, and it does not go that great. It's not like he was bombing or anything. It's just there weren't the numbers to have any kind of significant laughs. And he, at the end of his set, says, you know what? Forget it. Let's just try something. And so he brings up a buddy of his, a guy named Keegan, who does a Christopher Walken impression. And he's like, not a lot of people can do a Christopher Walken impression, blah, blah, blah. And he introduces Keegan. And then Keegan narrates as Kyle pretends to be a redneck in the woods who's going to have sex with a deer. And the stool is a deer. And so Christopher Walken is narrating this. The people in the audience are like, what is going on? Like, what is this? All five of them are just looking at each other like, should we stay? Is this supposed to be happening? And then he gets done and walks off the stage. And Kyle literally walks over to me. He's like, good luck with that. Just walks out. And so they introduce me, and I'm like, oh my God. And so I get up there, and I'm like, I'm sorry, y'all. I don't know what just happened. I don't know what's happened this entire show. And they were just like looking at me in shock. Turns out the guy who hosted, his dad's like a deacon. And I'm just like, I tried my best to recover the show, but it was horrible. It was the most work I think I've ever had to do. And it was individual work. It was five people. So I'm going around one by one. Are you good? Like, what's going on with you? Are you fine? Okay, I apologize. And you, sir, the deacon, are you like, we're going to put him on the prayer list. It's fine. Like, it was horrible, Danny. Like, I mean, literally, like, I was sweating before getting on stage. And like, it was not a nervous sweat. It was like, this is terrible. Like, and I know it's terrible and it's not going to get better, but I've got to make it through because I need this $25 to get home. So it was like that. Oh, it was rough. Yeah.
The grind.
Yeah.
I tell you what, Joe, let's do this. Before we get out of here, I got to ask you, here's a tough question. This is a thought-provoking question. If you could travel to the future and ask Joe Deuce, let's say 3 years into the future, and ask yourself one question, what would that be?
I think it'd be the same question that I asked myself already. What can I do better to make myself and my family more successful when we get to this point? I think that's a question I have to ask every day when I wake up, is like, what did I do yesterday and how can I be a better person? And if I can't, then I'm not looking hard enough. There's always something I should be improving on. You know, I talk too much. I'm too loud. I snore in my sleep, my wife tells me. Sometimes I'm selfish. Sometimes I'm greedy. Like, all those things are things I could be working on continually. I think that's what being a good person is about. It's not about donating to charity. I mean, that's great, and you should do that. It's not about, you know, being a servant all the time. That's great, and you should do that as well. But it's about literally just looking at yourself and saying, these are things that I could be better as a person at doing, whether it's sharing, whether it's, you know, mentorship, whether it's thanking people. Like, I do not show enough appreciation to my wife and to my friends who help me, and I'm trying to be better at that. Whether it's staying in contact and being a good friend, I've got a really good friend, Andy, who I've had since I was in college, and he started this new thing where if he thinks about you, he calls you. And if he doesn't get you and he leaves a voicemail, he doesn't care if you call back or not. You have your own life to live, but he wants to make sure that he's, at least when he thinks about you, he reaches out. And I'm like, man, that's like, why am I so horrible that I can't even do that? I'm like, that's great. And so now I've started trying to, like, oh, I'm thinking of this person. I might not call them, but at least let me text, like, hey, how are things going? And it's really, that thing has helped me rekindle a lot of, like, relationships that haven't been, you know, I haven't talked to these people in 2 or 3 years, not because I don't like them or they don't like me. We just haven't talked. You know how people fall out of touch. Another friend of mine, Dave McCreary, who's a magician comedian, and we do a podcast together. He took a challenge upon himself to be nothing but positive on social media. And he challenged me to do the same thing. And it was ungodly rough, because I want to judge people so much all the time. So I've tried to only be positive to people. And to be honest, it's relieved a lot of stress from my life. Like, I'm not sitting at work like, oh, I can't wait to get back on Facebook and talk to this person. I want to see what they said. Like, it's always just like, I don't really care now because I'm not being negative. So I don't have to absorb the negativity, if that makes sense. It's almost like you're getting out of things what you're putting into them, which is a tale as old as time. But who knew that it's that it's real? Dude,
that's a perfect answer, man. And first of all, Joe Deuce, you are all those things, man. You are fantastic. You're a good person. You're a hilarious comic. I want to say this. I do have there's a comic friend. Do you know Derek Zhu?
I do not.
Well, Derek, that's Derek. Derek will shoot me a text out of the blue. How you doing, man? You doing okay? You know, which he has no clue how much that means to me, you know, how awesome that is. And, you know, Derek does the same thing. He'll go on Facebook and he'll put these positive posts out there, you know, and I know what he's doing. He's trying to do his part because there's so much negativity on
there. So much, yeah.
So that, I think that's wonderful that you got somebody that does that too. And it's got me on the same way. I'm kind of like, I need to start trying to do this. You know, I need to reach out and let people know. I think that's a great idea, man. And that's a great answer. Joe, before we get out of here, where can the listeners find Joe Deuce? If they want to see Joe Deuce comedy, website, anything, where do they need to go?
Oh my goodness. Well, first of all, you can tune into the podcast me and Dave McCreary do. It's all about race. It's called Baloney Lips and the Woolly Worm. And it's on all platforms right now. I think we're only like 12 or 13 episodes in. And so be on the lookout for those episodes if you can find them. And you can look at my website's joedeucecomedy.com, see where I'm going to be. You can follow me on social media, Facebook, Instagram, Snapchat. I'm kidding. I'm married. Snapchat's a setup. so you can find me on all the other social media. Just type in That Guy Joe Deuce and click on the black one. I think there's another guy out there who maybe drives race cars or something named Joe Deuce. And YouTube me. I also should have a special coming out on Drybar. It is done. They've already edited it and put the artwork in. And I know you can probably search for it on their website. I don't know if I'm supposed to say that, but it should be out on their app soon as well. So you can check me out there, and I'm ramping back up. So be touring around starting in May. We're gonna start going out again. So can't wait to be back among people. I'm COVID free and vaccinated. So you can come give me a fist bump. I'm still gonna hand it to Taz afterwards.
I don't trust y'all. Shots. He's ready.
I got all my shots. I'm like the perfect pit bull, man. I got all my shots. I'm on the prowl. I'm ready to go.
Awesome. Well, man, Joe, I can't wait to cross paths with you again, man. And hey, man, once again, dude, thank you so much for coming on the Abracadam Podcast.
No problem. Thank you for having me, Danny. Appreciate you.
All right. I hope you guys enjoyed that episode with Joe Deuce. I love talking to Joe any chance I get. He's such a funny dude. And also, any chance you get, you should go see Joe do his thing on stage. So be sure to follow him on social media. You won't be disappointed, I promise. Also, if you guys have not done so yet, be sure to subscribe and follow the Abracadam Podcast on whatever platform it is you use to listen to podcasts on. And if you give us a review, I will give you a big shout out right here on the podcast, I promise. And like always, Abracadamits, thank you for listening.